Hello and welcome to Cage Club. Two fans, one cage. This is episode 97, Between Worlds, from 2018. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski, and with us today, from across the pond, if you will, we are bringing in our Scottish friends, the hosts, the creators, the brain children behind Cagerama and then Cagerama 2, Cage Uncaged, hashtag bring cage to Glasgow. We have Sean Welsh and Megan Mitchell. Hello, guys.
Hi, hey, guys. How's it going?
Hello.
I had your names in front of me looking at the names, and I still got nervous. I was like, I'm going to mix them up. I'm going to do it wrong. We can edit. Still was panicked. I don't know why.
That's absolutely fine. You sound like you nailed it.
Yeah, we'll answer to so any name, really. Like, we don't need any particular name. That's fine.
Well, we appreciate you being here. Time difference and all. You are in the future right now to talk about... Oh, actually, hold on. That's perfect. That was an accidental segue. But for a movie trapped between two places, we are separated by time and space. So this is a wonderful movie to talk about. Between Worlds, a movie that you guys are showing at Cagerama 2, right?
That's right. We actually have the UK premiere, which is a little bit staggered from the North American release. So our event is at the start of January, and that's what we're closing the festival with, the UK premiere of Between Worlds.
That's wonderful. Can you talk a little bit about coming up with Cagerama, what movies you showed last year, what you're doing this year, if there's any changes you made? I know you're adding in someone that's new but near and dear to our hearts in Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Could you just talk a little bit about the event, about why you started it, how it evolved, what you're doing this year? No wrong answers, just go for it.
I guess it came about because we're both lifelong Cage fans. Myself, I'm the leading academic in Valley Girl across the world. So we just had an affinity for Cage. We're both film programmers anyway. So we thought, why not bring the greatest actor to the greatest city?
There you go.
So we're still working on that aspect of it. But for the first year, we thought about Cage in two aspects. So Cage the Fighter and Cage the Lover. So we programmed the holy trinity of action films. So The Rock, Face Off and Con Air. And then we had some of his more romantic roles, so Moonstruck, Valley Girl, and...
Raising Arizona.
I love it.
Yeah, so jumping off from that, we're now in our second year, and we're just looking at Crazy Cage, I guess, some of his more out there, off-the-charts performances, I guess.
I think to give Cagerama 2 its full title, it's Cagerama 2, Cage Uncaged.
Yes. So which movies are you showing this year, aside from Between Worlds? What else are you showing?
Oh, there's so many. Basically, we took the opportunity, after last year was so well received, we've kind of turbocharged this year. So we actually have nine films.
Whoa, over the, okay.
Yeah, it's got out of hand, really.
Yeah, we kind of burst the banks of the weekend. We've got like a Friday screen of Mandy. Then we have Bad Lieutenant. We have Vampire's Kiss. We have Army of One. We have The Wicker Man. We have Mom and Dad. We have Adaptation. Have I run out yet? And we have Wild at Heart. I think that's all.
Wonderful. Oh. A lot of good stuff in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The general theme is, like, you know, his kind of more out there performances, like Megan said. So I think we're more sympathetic to... We're not ones for necessarily the Cage rage, you know, and the kind of snarky appreciation of Cage. We're more just, like, you know, the full holistic picture of the phenomenon that is Cage.
Because that's what... Not why we started this, but that's sort of been our guiding light this entire time, is not to make fun of him, but to honor his commitment and to really just admire how deep and how involved he gets into the movies. And, like, aside from a couple movies recently, he really never mails it in. Like, whether it's, like, a quote-unquote normal movie or a movie like this or whatever, he's always committed to the role. It's frustrating to me, and I'm sure also to you guys, in seeing the internet just be like, oh, look at, like, not the bees, but, like, if you watch the entire, like, The Wicker Man as a whole is, like, this, like, commitment to a type of movie that no one else knew that they were making other than the director, and, like, there's so much more to admire and to appreciate about that. It makes me a little sad when people just, you know, reduce him to a gif, but hopefully, you know, by watching the entire movie, people will understand a little bit more about what The Wicker Man is really, I guess, all about. If anyone can ever really understand what The Wicker Man is about.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right, because obviously the first thing that we encounter, not the first thing, but one of the things we encounter, like, promoting this is, why are you doing a Cage film festival? Like, he's terrible. And we do posts on Facebook, and inevitably, with enough attention, it's kind of like a Cage version of Godwin's Law. You'll get like someone saying he's terrible, like he is the worst actor of all time. But to be honest, like, we get way more Cage love than Cage kind of hate. It's certainly the audience. I think last year, because we had the kind of the holy trinity of the action Cage, we did have people that were just there to kind of like, not hate watch, but just like there for just those films. But because we have the whole variety of, like, you know, the Cage, like we had Cage of the Lover that time, this time we've got a way broader scheme. We get people that just love Cage for everything. And then that incorporates people that love the action Cage, and also the people that like to wear Cage clothes to come to the events, you know, like Cage-themed clothing. And
oh,
like,
of course.
Yeah.
Cage cosplay.
Oh, well, to be honest, we haven't encountered the Cage cosplay just yet, but we're told that someone is coming to this year's festival that looks like Cage, so we're hoping that they're going to lean into that.
Yeah, but that may be cover up for actual Cage to come. That's my hope.
Yeah.
That it's someone that's like, oh, I totally look like him, and it is, in fact, just Cage.
Well, this whole thing, it's just a huge excuse to meet Cage.
That's, yeah, you're like, asking us why we do it. It's like, I want to meet Nick Cage. How do I do that?
Yeah,
I mean, well, we had done Greg
McLennan from the Draft House. Yeah,
yeah, from the Draft House, and he did program some Caged marathons, and you know, eventually Cage showed up. Like, he got him there, and he spent the day, and they watched the movies together. So it's, you know, the possibility is there. It's not out of reach. So you're on the right track.
I think we're getting closer and closer. Last year, like, we had Marco, who I think you guys know. Uh-huh. And so Marco, we spoke to him via Skype, and he was there to like talk about the kind of. That was kind of prime period for Marco when he was like standing in for Cage. I guess he calls it the Cage wage years. And so like we were reaching out for Cage, but we got Cage's stand-in, and it was glorious. So I think we'll just keep on reaching, and I'm sure at one point we'll get him.
I hope so. It's the kind of thing that I would love to go to. Like, I envision a future where I am an eccentric millionaire who's just able to fly from film festival to film festival, and like wherever Cage is most likely to be. Like, when Cage showed up in Austin, it was, I think, like, I think it was the year I moved away from Austin. Like, I would have been at that event. And I was like, God, like, I missed him. But, like, it's going to happen at some point, I think. You know, I have faith in him and in the universe that I will one day meet him and all will be right in my world.
I think it's just that you're just walking that knife edge between meet him and restraining order.
I'm between worlds, if you will.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Between worlds.
So this Between Worlds is the 8th movie that Nicolas Cage has starred in that came out this year. So at the end of this episode, we're going to look back at all 8 movies. We're also going to look ahead to next year, because I don't know about you guys, but I have a sense of what these titles are, but I don't know really what the movie is about. And someone wrote to us on Twitter and said, I think it'd be cool if you look ahead to, you know, because Mike had said we want to look back and sort of have like a year-end wrap-up of both Cage Club and Cage's movies, but also look ahead to what's coming next and sort of, you know, if we know anything. Like, I try to go into these movies as blind as possible, but I know there's certain ones I'm really looking forward to. And so at the end, we're going to talk about that. But this, importantly, is the 8th movie that has come out with this year, which is ridiculous.
Amazing.
Mike, we were saying, you know, 2 years ago when he did 5, we're like, I can't believe he's never in the top 5. And then here we are 2 years later, 8.
It's just incredible. And for the most part, like, all very enjoyable as far as I'm concerned. You know, I think maybe we'll get there, but like one or two like, you know, but all in all, I was very pleased with his average this year. Like, very pleased. Like, a lot of fun.
He's killing it this year. And also, that's the other thing we get when we're talking about running a Cage, you know, film festival. Like, how are you, you know, how long will you keep it running? The joke was literally forever because he makes so many films. But like, no one expected that we could program like another Holy Trinity this year with like Mom and Dad and Mandy and Between Worlds, and they're all so good.
Yeah.
And they're all like recent Cage. Like, there's no he really, his average is incredible right now.
We moved, like, after we finished Cage, we started doing Keanu, and there was like, I think literally a year in between Keanu movies, which I guess for actors is normal, but considering we were so trained to expect one every like 2 months, it's like, that feels like forever. And you know, Charlize does one or two a year, and like Shia does, we're not really covering Shia actively anymore, but like Shia puts out one, maybe one a year. But like Cage is just like, oh, it adds fuel to the fire in terms of like making fun of him, but I also just, I just appreciate, because I would never have seen this movie if it wasn't for him. And I don't think it's like a great movie, but like I enjoyed watching it because he was in it, if that makes sense.
Yes. No, it is a great movie. Between Worlds is spectacular in craft and everything.
It's really funny to see the reviews kind of breaking. I don't know if you've noticed, like, I guess because the release is happening now, like, the reviews are coming out, which they obviously, there's only been the Fantastic Fest reviews, really, up until now. You know, because of the release, people are coming out, and it is getting a bit of critical appreciation, and, like, people are liking it. I think the New York Times gave it a really good review.
It's because...
Really? Yeah, oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think we might have posted it. No one is saying, this is terrible, but Cage is great, or this is, they're saying this film is like, is crazy. It's like strange. They're not saying like it's a bad film.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. I give it that. I knew nothing about it. I took a glance at one of the several posters, but I couldn't really gleam anything off it except for this looks crazy. Boy, I was just from the beginning just taken on this ride, and I gave myself over to this movie. Objectively, it might not be the best film, but I tell you, I had a great time watching it, and it just kept surprising me along the way.
You know, speaking of the poster, Mike, I messaged this to you, to all of you yesterday, but if you Google image search Between Worlds poster, the first three things that come up, maybe if you filter by a certain, like large or something, I don't know, but the first three posters that come up are all radically different, which to me means like they're either trying to remarket it or rebrand it or like do different audiences, because like it feels like for big movies like they'll have like a lot of posters but they'll all be about a theme. Like these are like three like wildly different posters in style, in color, in content, and like I don't think you can decipher anything from any of them really, other than like maybe fire, question mark, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean even the one that's heavy fire themed is like quite misleading, because it kind of has a, it might make you think of Drive Angry more than the film that you're about to see, like as if he's like leapt out of hell, and it's not that film. So yeah, I don't know. I think there was some kind of, I remember like when the posters were kind of being released, that there was some question about whether or not this was like fan art or if it was like an official photograph. And I don't know if maybe at least one of the posters is kind of maybe a production or a sales poster rather than like a, you know, commercial poster. I don't know.
I mean, you say he doesn't go to hell, but he does Ghost Rider himself at one point at the end of this movie, which we will get
oh,
to.
Yeah.
For sure. So this, I think important to note, this is written and directed by a woman who I've never heard of before, but, you know, there's not a lot of movies or anything really written by or directed women. This is Maria Pulera. This is like, I think like the first thing, or she did this thing called Falsely Accused, which is a Rosanna Arquette movie. This is like, this is her baby. Like, this is her movie. This also stars, Mike, I don't know if you, as we're recording this, just like a day or two ago, the new Hellboy trailer came out. And did you guys know that the daughter in this is like the fifth lead or something in Hellboy? Like, she's gonna be like this, I guess she's becoming like an action person, maybe? I don't know. If you consider this an action movie, I guess.
Wow, I actually
didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's really
I wouldn't really consider this an action
movie. Well, you know, there's action in it.
I mean, Cage gets a lot of action in it. Oh, it's a compromising movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Too much action, some might say.
Yeah, cut out all the action, and I think this movie is like an hour and 15 minutes, maybe? I don't know.
The first thing I noticed, and I was so glad that he actually wrote the score, the theme for it, but I don't know how he did.
I couldn't believe it.
When I was like, this opening music sounds like Twin Peaks, and I was like, oh, it was written by Angelo Badalamenti. And I was like, thank God that he did that, because it would have been like such a knockoff, such a ripoff. Like, we were just talking, Mike, which is not out yet, but the first episode of Hanks from the Memories, we were talking about how in He Knows You're Alone, the theme song is basically the Halloween theme just ripped from Halloween. And I was like, is this another one of those? But no, he just does his like beautiful somber piano ballad. Why? I don't know. Like, maybe he's just like, hey Cage, I worked with, you know, David Lynch and you on Wild at Heart 30 years ago. Like, maybe, you know, bring me back for this movie. I don't know. Another movie about fire. Who knows?
I would love to know the story behind it. Also, because there's like, there's at least one cue. Like you're saying, it sounds exactly like one of the, I think it's Audrey's theme from Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like one of these kind of Muzak knockoffs. Like, God love you, Angelo. Like, all respect to Angelo, but it made me wonder whether or not, like, if he did do the whole score, or if he just kind of contributed to it, or because, you know, sometimes that's a thing.
I almost wondered if they just got a hold of some of his old unused stuff, like Tarantino did for Hateful Eight when he used some of like the old Marconi score that was never used for The Thing, and he's just like, oh, we bought the rights to some of his unused music, and we can like lace it throughout the movie, because I can't imagine how they got him for this movie. But I mean, if they did, they did, and that's great. It helped the tone for me a lot. Like, the thing is so crazy. I was able to sort of say, okay, they're going into Twin Peaks territory. Like, it's starting to get surreal intentionally. And so I could sort of accept the madness a little bit more just because of his musical cues. So I appreciated that.
But also, the needle drops in this film are crazy. Like, there's the Marilyn Manson cover.
Yeah.
And then the song at the end as well, like, which, I mean, I presume we're going to spoil this to a certain extent for people. Otherwise, we can't talk about it. But, like, you know.
Oh, no. Spoil away. by all means. We're gonna spoil this entire movie. But, yeah, spoil away.
But it's just, like, the choice is just because you have these kind of, like, I guess, kind of slightly bargain basement bad lamenti. And then you have, like, the leader of the pack. And then they put a spell on you. And it's, like, it's really unusual.
The leader of the pack was, like, when that came in, I was blown away. Because I love that song. I want to say it was used really well, but, like, I don't, it's just wild. It's wild.
I Put a Spell on You is, I think that sequence is one of my favorite sequences of the year, because I was spellbound watching Cage getting soaked with a hose in slow motion while shaking it, and that song playing, like, I fell into a trance during that moment.
I will never forget some of the scenes in this film. They are emblazoned on my soul, and I'm not just talking about his, like, you know, banana hammock moments, like the hose moment, and there's just so many. It's almost like a kind of trauma, I think, in some ways.
It's this second walking around in his underwear moment while wearing an animal on his shirt scene this year, because in Mandy he had the tiger shirt on with his underwear in the bathroom.
Yep.
And then in this, he's wearing, like, the alligator shirt, and he's walking around in his underwear.
It looks like he's got, like, snake skin underwear on or something, right?
Yeah, it's snake skin. I've got a tally.
is it an alligator or a man-gator? Because isn't that what he says to the
guy?
Yeah,
he's, like, in the very first, like, opening scene, he's like, next time, pick on a man-gator. And then he, like, walks about the entire time in, like, a man-gator shirt.
What is a man-gator?
He's a man-gator.
Yeah.
He answers that question. He poses that question and answers it.
It's all about philosophy, really.
Now, do you think that these snakeskin underwear are a sign of his individuality and belief in personal freedom?
I think that's probably how he justifies it to whoever's trying to clothe them that day. I wonder, like, if he dresses himself, Nicholas, or
that whole, there's loads of parts in this film where you're just like, that was a Cage choice.
Well, I actually meant, like, day to day, does he dress himself?
No.
Like, or does he get his clothes laid out for him?
He looks the most like I see him when I see sort of paparazzi photos at the airport. Like, yeah, he's got a ring on every finger. He's got, like, the leather jacket thing going. I mean, it works for his character because he's this trucker loner sort of guy. But I was like, oh, he kind of just looks like modern day-to-day Cage a little bit, with a little more beard and crazy hair.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that this is model's own wardrobe, because he has that hat, the turkey and the wolf.
That's my first note about the movie. I want a turkey and the wolf hat.
Yeah. I don't
know what
that
is.
Do you know what that is? Because I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I didn't Google.
Yeah, we investigated. It's a restaurant in New Orleans.
Of course it is.
Oh, New Orleans.
We couldn't figure, we really went deep with this research, because, like, if you go into they sell it, you can buy one, but it's not the kind that he has, because he has a really specific, I think it has camouflage in the brim. They don't seem to sell that particular version online, and also it's sold out.
Yeah.
So,
but they seem shocked as well, so it's not like the restaurant knew that he was going to be wearing it, or he came in and bought it. They were just like, oh, there's a new Cage film out, and he wears one of our hats the whole time. And they're kind of stoked about it, but we're not sure how he got it.
Either they're kind of really cool, yeah, or he stole one of their hats.
Well, he's got, like, an entire saga of films that take place in New Orleans. Basically,
I think he lives there too, right?
Like, he's got his pyramid there for when he passes away. He's going to be buried at that famous graveyard. So I'm glad that is sort of a Cage connection, a link to part of his life. And there's also a moment in here where he says, like, this bike will get you to Memphis. And I was like, oh, well, there's sort of like an Elvis nod or something too. So he's sneaking in his personal touches all throughout this thing.
So what I did not know is that this is the third movie he's filmed in Mobile, Alabama. So this is, I guess, you know, it's set in Alabama and it's filmed in Alabama. Although this is a little bit of trivia for you. I think one answer is obviously very, very obvious, but I want to know if you guys can get the other ones. This is the fourth time in a Cage movie that he's named Joe.
This is fourth time. Okay. Yep. Obviously Joe.
Right. That's the obvious one. So there's this one and Joe. There's two more. There's one that I remembered and then one that I don't know if I knew or just maybe forgot. Can any of you remember one of the other two times that he was named Joe?
Bangkok Dangerous.
Bangkok Dangerous. That's the one I remembered. Yeah. Yep. That's number three. And number four, I don't know.
Oh, Wind Takers.
Wind Talkers.
Yeah, Wind Talkers. There you go.
Wind Talkers. Good pull.
Thanks, IMDb.
Yeah, Megan's definitely
Oh, you cheated.
She's cheating.
But Joey, wow. This goes back to something I mentioned on a Revisited recently, where it's like, I need to brush up on that kind of stuff, like the trivia, like what was his character's name in every movie?
I know.
I wish I had that backlog
in still. Wind Talkers, he was probably called by his last name. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that doesn't really count, but if you search on IMDb.
That is a pretty deep cut. You'd have to be sitting, like, reading out the names of his characters, like Aya Stark from Game of Thrones, way before you went to bed, just to memorize all the names.
Ooh, so, right. Yes. I got a list in my head, right?
Yeah. All the Cage characters I want to kill. Now, I don't know if you... This is more of a Keanu thing, although it has crossed over a bit into Cage. Mike, I don't know if you made a note of this. Cage eats a hot dog very early in this movie, and I lost my mind.
I didn't catch that. I wasn't picking up on Keanu cues because I was just so struck by this movie. I was just so into it that I was trying to investigate the Cage-isms and things, like his hand acting. Brilliant hand acting in this movie, like really throwing those hands around, especially in the first half. So things like that were really popping out to me.
I have a note written down here. It's a quote early on, and I don't remember the context at all. Heh heh, do I have kids? And he holds up a photo.
Oh.
Wife and daughter, oops, they're dead. Can you
I literally have that written down as well.
We all have that written down. Yeah. He says, like, wife and daughter, you like? And shows her a picture of his wife and daughter. And then she says, aye, they're lovely. And he goes, oops, they're dead. Like, got you. That's kind of an I wonder how much of this is ad-libbed.
Yeah, there's a lot of quotable Cage lines that you're like, I kind of feel that these are totally improv.
Yeah, he's got the way he calls it a couch. He's like, ouch. Yeah. I was like, ooh, he's really just leaning into all these readings. And it's great. He's finding ways to just have fun here.
This movie is really weird in that as soon as I finished it, I forgot like 80% of it. But I feel like the other 20% I'm never going to forget. Like, it's just...
80% is all sex. That's why.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, it really does reward repeated viewing. I don't think there ever was a Cage film that you could soak so much up in like the second time around. It's just, it really is the gift that keeps giving. Like, I would recommend, like, watch this as many times as you possibly can.
Well, so let's go over the plot, which we have not really mentioned here, is that Cage is a trucker, down and out on his luck, broke, dead wife, dead daughter. He meets up, he goes to this truck stop, finds a woman being choked, thinks he saves her, but then realizes that she's able to somehow communicate with the great beyond, go between worlds. We find out that her daughter was just in a motorcycle accident, which we, like, is alluded to and we've seen, like, clips of multiple times, but, like, we never actually see her in the accident, right?
No, I don't think so.
Just flashback clips, yeah.
But we get, like, the clips, the flashbacks, like, leading up to the accident. Like, we're going to get to it at some point. Like, it's going to be, like, Cage's fault or something, and we never get there.
Oh, that's a good... Yeah, I never thought that. Well, that's... Wow. I've seen this film so many times and that hasn't occurred to me yet, so now I'm going to have to watch it again.
But then the boyfriend also, like, the bad Zac Efron lookalike actor that's her, the daughter's boyfriend, he alludes at one point that there was, like, stuff going on before it, that he's pleased that she doesn't remember. So there's, like, little breadcrumbs that there's maybe stuff going on there, but then they're just like, scrap that, end it with fire.
I think all of this screams prequel to me.
I was just trying to figure out, like, her powers. She has to get choked out to communicate with the like, this was crazy. Like, right off the bat, I was like, okay, this is gonna go out of control.
Well,
very
fast. I want to say, I think it's kind of established in that when she was drowning as a child, and that's when it first happened,
she left her
the
body,
opening
right?
credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to kind of unlock her power, she has to kind of trigger it the same way, or at least that's what she's come up with to trigger her
So either like a near-death situation or maybe like being suffocated or not able to breathe, but that is able to somehow put her between worlds. And then that's where it's kind of limbo-ish, but it's also like where people in comas go. But
you
also
know, it reminded me of where the Pay the Ghost ghosts kept
yes.
all their children across the ghost
also
bridge.
Very good point. I mean, this movie asks so many questions or sets up so many things that just has zero interest in paying off. Like, there is the nurse in that room who
comes
just
back.
Feels like Southern Cajun, because it seems like when Franca Potente, Run Lola Run, goes between worlds to rescue her daughter, the nurse senses or can see her do that, and it's
absolutely.
Like, and like, there's a brief conversation about it later, but it is like almost basically not addressed again. I was like, how are you not gonna like? How is she not like the key to all of this?
Why is she a nurse if she's also
I don't know.
Presumably a voodoo priestess? Is that what's implied?
I thought she was there to make sure stuff like this wouldn't happen. Like at the end, she's like, I'm there to make sure, like, you know, the right one stays, the right souls go on, and you know, dead people don't come back with the wrong soul in their body.
So she's kind of like a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, more of a real-life Ghostbuster type, yeah.
Megan, you mentioned the fake Zac Efron boyfriend. I thought it was a big missed opportunity that they did not cast Weston Cage in one of these two roles.
Oh, that would be amazing. Because there is a lot of, like, not bad acting, but there is a lot of, like, so-so acting in this. And fake Zac was that all the way through until the end when he's like, I'm totally on board with this whole body swap situation, let me shoot everybody. So I was there for that.
He picked that up so quickly, that character, because he's like, you know, oh, I know what you've got crawling inside you.
Everybody is on board immediately when they are explained what is happening. Like, when Cage's wife inside Billy's body is, like, breaking it down, he's like, okay, yeah, all right. Totally.
Mike, I like that, like, you just said that, like it's just normal. Like, Cage's wife inside Billy's body. Like, Franca Potente can go between worlds, but somehow, I guess she brings the wrong person back?
Yeah, so is that because Cage was choking her out, that the soul of his dead wife, who we find out was a vengeful person, spirit, died killing their daughter and then burning the house down to, like, spite Cage for some reason we never find out?
I need to stop you there because she burns one room down.
Oh, yeah, that house is... No, because the whole time they're like, you know, it's a terrible fire, like, killed the whole family. And then they go back to the house at the end and it seems to be half the back porch was burned down. Like, it goes into the room where, like, supposedly the daughter died and it's, like, absolutely fine. Go back and watch the house. No, because then he goes back inside. I'm pretty sure that only, like, the back part was supposed to be burned. That makes no sense, like, from what he was saying.
Yeah, but also none of this movie makes sense. So, like, I can't really hold this against it.
Well, I want the furnishing of the house to make sense. I want the burn patterns to be real.
So I was just wondering if his contact with the medium, because that's what, kind of what Julie, the mom, is. Like, she's a medium. Like, did he, like, corrupt the process and, like, draw the wrong spirit? But that's never, he doesn't really display any other powers later in the movie, really. He has a couple weird dreams, but I just figured that was his wife's spirit messing with him. And then later, at the very end, when Julie gets choked out by fake Zac Efron, and that all finally comes back, and they decide to try it that way again, she, like, crosses over perfectly into the spirit world and can, like, maneuver and switch souls around, it seems, and do whatever she needs, exchange her soul for her daughter's or whatever ended up happening.
Now, Mike, I have a theory that when Franca Potente went between worlds, she suffered from what I suffer from in hair blindness and just grabbed the wrong blonde girl and brought her back.
Oh, but that means that, like, it's kind of like the movie Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg, where, like, a lot of souls are always just kind of hanging around the hospital.
Well, it feels like they're all just hanging around that burnt out house for no reason.
And they're all just trying to jump into a living body whenever possible. It's just like there's a line in the afterlife.
I don't know.
When the mother comes, Cage's only wife, this is a lot to keep track of. When, at the end, the spirit of his dead wife returns to the afterlife, the daughter's just waiting for her there. Like, she's just been stood about the burnt-out house by herself, which takes parental negligence, to a whole other level.
For sure.
And she's just waiting. So, like, what is she doing all day? She's just, like, stood there. That's a strange afterlife for a five-year-old child.
There's also a brilliant part where Cage obviously forgets that he was meant to have a daughter, and he was like, how would I know? I've never raised children. Like...
I guess the big question is, if his wife killed the daughter and then herself to spite Cage, why is he so quick to embrace her again when he finally believes that it's her in the body of Billy? Like, shouldn't he hate her?
Oh, he didn't know until the very end, right? Yeah. She kind of turns and gives her villain speech and was like, you thought I loved you? Like, you know, I hated you. And then he, like, cracks. He cracks.
Oh, yeah, he goes so Cage crazy in that. Just says Sarah over and over again.
Yeah,
so
because
good.
I think Zach Vacron threatens to shoot him. And then she
well, I
says,
Zach Vacron. I like that. Okay. Keep going.
Then she says, hey, no, only I get to shoot this idiot. And for some reason, she does this total heel turn out of nowhere and just, like, does that Bond villain, like, this is actually I'm bad. And just, like, lets it all spill out. She had no reason to do that at all.
Ultimately, she hated him for paying the mortgage.
That, I think that's
like,
what
this
was
amazing. Like, she comes back from the dead just to kill him? What is she gonna do now? Run around in the new body? Or is she gonna then kill herself again? But then she's stuck with him in the afterlife. So I'm just... Her ghost plan is just confusing a little.
Yeah, and there's just no answer to this. Like, and I think it's that this is one reason why this is a puzzle that's just gonna like keep people wondering for like generations to come. I think
because I watched the last 20 minutes of the movie 3 times yesterday, and I still don't understand it. And maybe I just didn't watch enough of the end. But it feels like most of the movie is one thing, and then everything reverses.
So by end, do you mean the sort of the Marvel stinger that we get where like we find out Cage's character as a young boy shot his dad to protect his mother?
There's that for sure. Which makes, like, how is that the last thing you see in the movie?
Wouldn't that be the first?
The blocking kind of suggests that he might have also shot his mother because like she stood right behind his dad when he shoots. Right. So is there a thing there about like maybe that implies that his character is bad somehow? Because
well, the dad threatens to burn down the house with the mum in it. That's the only connection I could think that when he is like arguing with the mum, the dad shouts like, I'll burn this all down. And that's what triggers Cage to like shoot him.
Oh my God, I've just realised. Joe is married to Lydia Hearst. Is that who plays his first wife?
Okay.
Who is now married to Chris Hard? Is that right? Of the Nerdist? Or ex of the Nerdist?
Oh, is that her?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
you
Hearst,
might,
yeah.
You might want to double check that. He's definitely old enough to be her father.
Oh, yes.
In real life. So, what about if his wife is the reincarnated spirit of his dad that he shot?
Oh,
whoa.
And
so
that's why they
wife?
Burned it
yeah,
down, because he threatened to burn it anyway.
Yeah.
So he comes back as his wife to burn down his son's house and have a 5-year-old child with him. That's deep.
Yeah, that is.
Whoa.
That's a deep cut. That's fucked up.
And then come back again after he died a second time to inhabit a stranger's body that he just happened to be near in the hospital one day.
And yeah. Fuck his son a lot.
That's the malevolent.
That is vengeance.
That is crawling around inside you. I wrote down in my notes, is she a demon? Otherwise, she's just like a random ghost.
You know, I really thought that it was going to go there at one point. I was like, before it became like nonstop sex, like in the second act, which it becomes for a while, which...
It's a real... I can't help but feel this is a real window into Cage's actual sex life. There's just so much stuff there that he's definitely brought to the role himself. Like when he says, fuck me, like Linda Blair in The Exorcist, like repeatedly.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, because I thought like while they were... Because they have rough sex. So I thought he was going to start choking her during sex and she was going to start seeing crazier things.
Oh, that
and
should
then
have happened.
Maybe more like demons. And yeah, and then we find out that they aren't souls of people we loved, but there actually are demons crossing over and it gets a lot more of a, like a horror thing going on. But it just, it really sticks with that drive-in kind of exploitation, just skin part, like the skin flick part of it.
I also can't believe that we talked for almost 40 minutes and we have not mentioned the fact that he, while compromising Billy or Frank Potente, I don't know, everybody has blonde hair in this movie. I am not good with faces. That he's reading from a book entitled The Memories by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Which,
what was that?
Well,
that was amazing.
We've recreated that. We've made that into a zine because we were so awestruck by the idea that Cage just was like on set one day and was like, do you know what this sex scene needs? my memories.
Well, I looked it up online, and he said he was inspired by another writer. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Because that was a mind-blowing thing while watching this to me. Like, that was a moment where I'm like, this movie is hitting levels that Cage fans can appreciate, and I feel like the average viewer might just sort of think is bad, but like... In reality, like if you can really see what you're watching, you know that like this is kind of one of the greatest moments in Cage's history. Like he's in the middle of sex, reading from a book of his own memories. I was like losing my mind.
He said, I was inspired by the novels of Henry Miller, Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn. I always thought they were not only sensual, but hilarious in terms of the braggadocio of Henry Miller, that he would go into great detail about his adventures in the sensual realm, and I wanted to bring a little of that kind of humor to Between Worlds with that concept.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
Just another thing, like the hat and stuff, you know, his little flourishes. Like, this might be one of the most, like, personal Cage movies that there's been yet. I don't know. But we know that when a director lets him do his thing and trusts in him, great things can always happen. So I give a lot of credit to the director for, you know, having the guts to unleash the Cage, basically, in this.
I definitely like this movie the least of out of all four of us. It feels like all three of you are, like, fully on board. And I'm just here trying to, like... make sense of things.
Well, I'm still trying to make sense of things, but I'm on board with the confusion and the fun and the madness of it.
You need to watch another three or four times.
Probably. That's the gist that I'm getting.
I mean, there's so much stuff that you forget, I think, for the first time through. Your brain can't really comprehend that, like, he has this sex scene where at the end of it he just smashes a lamp for no reason. Like, stuff like that all the way through. These wee details that you don't really register because they're too crazy. And then you can enjoy it on a second viewing.
Joey, what about the moment when Billy's giving him a hand job on the couch while Julie's behind them in the kitchen and Cage, like,
well, yeah, she, like,
is caught between worlds.
And then, yeah, she's getting called in like that. Yeah, I admire that. I don't know. I mean, there's also the first sex scene in this movie is when he's talking to Franca Potente after they go back. He says, "I smell like 3 days on the road." She says, "I like it." He doesn't remember how to have sex. She says, "I can show you." He says, "Really? You want to have sex?" And then they, like, start going, like, animalistically. Like, he very clearly remembers. Like, is that, like, a pickup line, I guess?
I think almost every line in this film is a pickup line. And if the lines that he uses on her work, then, I mean, anything he says is going to be effective, isn't it?
Yeah. So, like, after she catches him having sex with Billy, and he's running around in a, like, snakeskin, like, banana hammock, and then she says to him, like, "Put on some pants, you're disgusting." And he's so hurt for that. He's like, "Why would you say that?" And it's like really heartfelt and deep. And I feel like he genuinely was hurt by that. He's thinking he's in his prime in this.
But the thing is, there's honestly the trauma. There's some jiggling going on there that just really cut me to my core.
He's got some middle-aged meat on the go.
I was talking more about the banana hammock than anything else. But because he really leans into that particular scene.
Mm.
That's the scene with perhaps the best line in the whole film, and that's when, like, she confronts him, obviously, with, "You have to get rid of this person," and, like, I guess the spirit that's inhabiting her daughter, and he just says, "What do you expect me to do? Kill my wife?" Like, he's totally got her. He's like, "Well, what are you gonna do about that? You expect me to kill my wife?" And he just has this little like turn of his head, like, you know, got you.
I do feel that. Like, I feel like he's coming across, like, super sincere. Like, he's really got a handle on whoever this guy is. Even if I can't quite figure it out, like, somewhere in Cage's mind, he knows exactly what he's doing with this guy. I buy it. I guess that's what it comes down to.
He just commits. He does commit. That's Cage.
Yeah.
The thing that I was wondering the most about this movie while I was watching it is at what point they were going to address the fact that Billy is not Billy. Very early on, she's, like, feeling herself up in the mirror and, like, smiling. And I was like, oh, it's very clearly not her, but, like, the movie gave no indication of who that was. And then she's, like, there's that scene, I think, a little bit later where she's, like, smoking a cigarette on her bed and, like, looking through, like, family photo albums and, like shit-talking the photo albums. I'm just like, there's so many things happening, and the movie is, like, letting us know, like, that's not Billy, but it's not at all addressing who it might be, which is wild.
Okay.
And then eventually they kind of get to it when she confesses to Cage, like, this is, you know, I'm your wife. But I was just like, at what point are they going to, like, it was just like this sort of like cat and mouse game a little bit with the audience. Like, you know that something's going on, but like, we're going to hold that reveal back. I don't know.
I got it. I don't know how. I got it immediately.
You thought it was his wife?
Immediately. Immediately, I wrote down, that's not his wife. Is that his wife? And she had like one or two things where she was like, good to see you. And he's like, how do you know me? And all this. And I was like, "That I can't believe it." I mean, it wasn't confirmed until later, but somehow I knew. I couldn't believe it. And I'm so glad that the movie confirmed it, or else I would have still felt crazy.
I think it's there really early on, like, and it's on Cage's face. I think when he's in the hospital room or something very early on, when she's asleep in bed or waking up and she speaks to him and he looks at her and he has this look in his face as if to say, you're my wife. And like, I think that's how he sells it, because you're already expecting it to, like, you know, there's definitely something more there. It's all in his one look, with this one expression that he does.
Yeah, but Billy's entire oddness, like, particularly after she gets out of the hospital, can all be explained with the fact that she was let out of hospital 3 days after coming out of a coma. With a lot of drugs. Like, is that the American health system? Or, because I was just like, help her. No wonder she's confused.
I don't really have answers for that.
One of the greatest smash to title cards ever. 3 days later, you know, cut to black. I was so jarred from that I had to shift around in my seat a little bit. I was like, wait, what? What's happening?
One question, this has nothing really to do with the plot, but I don't know if any of you noticed, but Megan might, because months and months ago, Megan sent me an angry Facebook message that said, in her quest to become the world's preeminent scholar on Valley Girl. Was it posters or what did we know? There was something that we noticed about Valley Girl.
Woody Woodpecker.
Yeah, it was the Woody Woodpecker. It's the Woody Woodpecker brooch that Julie is wearing when you're first introduced to Julie in the mall. And then later on, when you're first introduced to Randy, he, for no apparent reason, also has this Woody Woodpecker brooch on. And I thought I was the first person to pick this up. I was like, here we go, like, totally, like, confirmed the fact that I, you know, all know the most about Valley Girl. And then when I searched it, the only thing that came up was that you guys had clearly noticed it at some point and wrote like one sentence about it, whereas I had like 500 paragraphs about this, like how like important this, and you know what it signified about their love and all that. So yeah, you ruined that for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. That was all Mike, I'm pretty sure. I also mentioned to you at the same time that, like, remember Mike really, really early on, I think it was maybe like Fast Times and then Valley Girl, or Best of Times and Valley Girl, where they had the same Devo poster on the wall. And we're like, what is happening?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I brought that up is because I don't know if any of you noticed the posters on Billy's walls, but they're basically just like stock photo. There
yeah,
is
like
just
swimmers and things. Yeah.
There's a swimmer, and people there's just a stretching guy's like shirtless chest, but no head and no real legs. It's just like a fit torso, and it's like, like, it's just, we don't have the money to afford anything. So like, what is the cheapest thing we could put on the wall? And like, I was just thinking, like, what 18, 20 year old girl, whatever, has these posters on her wall? No, none of them. It's just wild.
There's another element which I haven't had completely confirmed, but I'm pretty sure that at the side of the bed there's a framed picture of Frankenpotent with a cigarette in her mouth. Randomly.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. You
can
see
it in one of the humping scenes.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's either her daughter's room or it's her room.
It's weird. I mean, there's not one non-smoker in this entire film. Like, even the nurse is puffing away like no one's business. They're all getting lung cancer.
Yeah.
Like, hardcore.
And Cage with the flask just chugging away throughout the whole movie.
And drinking her meds.
He's drinking her meds.
Secretly.
He's on
the cough syrup, too.
Is it the no drowsy? Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. He's addicted
to that's
no
what
drowsy.
He calls it. I don't know if that's what it's called, but that's what he calls it, the no drowsy.
Right. See, I wasn't sure if it was
yeah, it's like, America
brand.
Drugs.
Like, I've heard no-doze, and I've heard, like, other things that, like, you know, and, like, anti-drowsy, like, but, like, no-drowsy does not seem like a thing that anybody would market, because that is a terrible name, but also wonderful for, you know, Cage saying it.
Yeah.
Anything else that you guys caught that you really want to make sure that we cover? Any favorite moments, any favorite lines, any favorite gift-worthy scenes? I guess we have to talk about Cage getting, I mean, we alluded to it, but Cage getting soaked with the hose, right? Where he's in like a music video kind of sorts, mm-hmm. seemingly.
Oh, yeah.
But that's before, like, Julie's watching this and, you know, Billy, like, prancing around the cage. Before they're like, any suspicion properly, I guess, that they're pumping. And then she's like, okay, I see this. It's kind of weird. It's totally weird. And she just leaves. She lets that play out in our back garden.
Yeah.
Like, totally. She's like, fine.
She's like, it's weird.
And that's before Cage knows that's his wife, too, I think.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a lot of scenes in this movie where, like, I don't know if you're supposed to know if it's real or not. Like, it feels like there's a lot of scenes where, like, Franca Potente has the dream, right? Like, where she starts mm-hmm. to suspect that Cage is banging her daughter. She, like, dreams, like, walking in on them, and then she wakes up. And I feel like that might, again, kind of maybe be not real. But, like, it's never really confirmed or denied. Like, it makes as much sense being real or not real, but it feels like it's in that part of the movie where, like, we're not supposed to know if we can trust what we're seeing, I guess.
It's possible.
Well, it's the ends as well. So, him just dousing himself in petrol and then setting himself alight, but then still being able to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
Like, that still works.
All while Leader of the Pack plays.
And then putting the cigarette out on himself.
The CGI fire, by the way, is... Fire emoji. Literally.
It's about as realistic as the fire emoji, I can tell you that mm-hmm. much. That's for sure. But, like, he, like, splashes himself with the gasoline and has, like, this, like, wonderful face. Like, he got it in his mouth or something, and then, like, splashes himself again. And what I think is cool, aside from the fact that the CGI looks terrible, is that he flicks the lighter open, and immediately his entire body catches on fire.
Yeah.
Well, but that's because... gasoline, you know, it's the fumes that catch fire, isn't it? Not the actual.
But it doesn't even take, like, a second totally applies to grow.
This, I think maybe he's film. Just maybe he was already doused in petrol.
Like, maybe he's just a very flammable man.
Yeah,
maybe
he's got so many medicines and chemicals in his body that they're bound to be a little bit.
Oh, Jack Daniels sponsored this entire film. There's not a scene where there's not a bottle of Jack Daniels.
I like how he was baptized in both water and fire in this movie. He had the hose scene, and then he had burning himself alive.
It's very biblical.
There is a scene where Cage and Franca Potente have sex on their couch, right? Like, in the house where the daughter is asleep, I guess?
Oh yeah, the mad stones. They're stoned? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
that was
lots
a pretty
of, like,
funny scene.
Yeah, they're hysterical and screaming, and it's really uncomfortable,
it's
yeah.
It's very upsetting.
How do you know my last name? Because it's my last name, too. Billy's gone. It's me, Mary. Mary's gone. You have respect for my wife, or I'll spank it into you.
Oh,
oh boy.
He's up for having sex with that young girl long before he's like, oh, it's my wife anyway. That's a total excuse.
I'm wondering if he thinks he can parlay this somehow into, like, a weirdo three-way with a mother-daughter thing. And I was like, oh, don't go there. Please don't go there. Like, that's why I was glad at least one of them was possessed in some manner. Because at least it wasn't really technically, you know, her daughter.
Yeah, but I mean, if I'm right, that was his father.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, boy. Which I don't know what's weirder.
This needs several prequels, not just one.
Oh yeah, definitely.
When he's reading from Memories by Nicolas Cage, he references his golden cock, and I was wondering, Mike, if this is the golden man from Next, if this is like a crossover character.
See, gold has been coming up lots and lots as we've been rewatching these movies too. You know, he wears the gold suit again and Snake Eyes and everything, so he likes to be the gold man.
Do you think this is maybe, like, you know, taken together as like a prophecy of a coming gold man? Nicolas Cage is somehow the avatar of this new religion. I think so.
I think it's just a biopic. I think it's all factual.
Wow.
It's all, like, I mean, if he's reading from a book by Nicolas Cage, that kind of implies that this takes place in a world where Nicolas Cage is personal
exists,
reason?
Yes, and is famous enough to have a book published. Yeah. Or it's an alternate reality where Cage is an author.
Oh, wow.
Maybe Cage can jump between worlds.
Ooh, I mean, of course he can.
And do you think that, you know, this truck driver just happens to be a perfect doppelganger and gets noticed as Cage? Always, Cage, is that you? And he's like, no, I'm just a trucker. Yep. Sorry. You got me confused with someone else.
See, that's the most plausible explanation for this film.
There are a couple quotes really at the end. The only other things that I really have written down that I want to mention is that there's just a back and forth that I just love where Cage says to Billy, when he knows it's his wife, "You want the stars, baby, I'll give you the stars." And she says, "You'll give me the stars, Joe?" He says, "I always said I would." And I was like, all right. Like, and that's it. Like, they just move on. Like, that's just, I guess, a thing that they talked about.
That feels like a very noir line to me, Joey. Mm-hmm. And, like, recently with not just Spider-Man, but, like, Dog Eat Dog and things. Yep. And, like, him really leaning into the Bogart stuff. Yeah. Like, that's what it made me think of.
And then the only other one I have is, like, in that same scene toward the end, Cage says a question that I wish more characters asked in movies, which is, "You're not gaslighting me, are you?" Which, you know, when we did Inconceivable, which we absolutely loved, which I absolutely loved, throw that question out there and see how people react, because, like, it feels like he could be just being lied to this entire time, but who knows?
I want to know who taught Cage the word gaslighting.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Like, if he knew it before the script, or if he just, you know, yeah, who?
Oh, there's no script.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Didn't we establish it's more of like a documentary?
Yeah. I think this is basically all shot in one of Cage's many properties that he possibly burnt down by accident.
It's an insurance scam. It's a long game, but he's getting there.
I think there's a lot of lines and moments in the film that make me wonder. Like, there's the bit where he suddenly stops and says out loud, "Is that a siren? Do you hear a siren?" That's almost certainly not scripted, but they have added a siren sound effect. So I feel like, did they just maybe go back and, like, they fill in the blanks of his performance? So to kind of, basically the whole film is, like, constructed around his performance. I think that's, I mean, that would explain a lot. Also the fact that he dresses himself and brought his own hammock.
Yeah, and has too much sex.
Too much sex. I don't know, it's like, say, you never get to the end of your life and say, "Oh, I wish I'd had less sex." I think maybe at the end of a shoot, Nicolas Cage says, "Could we maybe get some more sex into this film? Can we go back and do reshoots where I'm in now?" I don't know what kind of room he was in. It was like he was in the back of a car or something in the
flashback scenes of the wife, yeah.
Yeah, in some kind of van.
But also with fairy lights, which is very, like, Urban Outfitters.
Yes.
Mike, do you have any other notes about Between Worlds before we reflect back on the year that was?
Oh, man, like, I do, but I don't want to go, like, launching into, like, a whole other hour of what is going on in this movie. It's not, like, one of the best movies, but, like, I had a hell of a great time watching this one. I thought Cage is terrific. He's really committed. He's having a lot of fun here. The story is really fucking crazy. It's so crazy and wacky and out of control. Like, I was also thinking at one point, Joey, like, if there was no sort of possession going on, this is kind of like one of those old Poison Ivy movies where it's just sort of like a Skinamax flick that's on at like 2 a.m.
The newest seduction.
But this is more of like a modern sort of take on that, where they're adding exorcisms and possession and all kinds of different crazy things going on here. But I mean, look, I had a great time. It's not for everyone, but I really feel like Cage fans are gonna love it and find a lot in it to be talking about for a long time.
They announced that the Blu-ray is coming out in February, but it is on demand now. This is one that, you know, we might have mentioned on a previous episode that, like, it was floating around the dark web, if you will, what Mike calls the dark web, for a while. Like, it got leaked somewhere at some point, and we could have watched it, but, you know, we like to... It's important to me to be able to release these to a point where people can watch the movie and then listen.
Yeah.
And so we waited so long for this. In that time that we were waiting, we also got, like, three other new Cage movies, so, like, it wasn't too bad.
We have the UK premiere, obviously, on the 6th of January. And then I believe it's been released by Thunderbird Releasing in March in the UK. So there's still a wee bit of time to wait for the UK audiences if they want to stay on the right side of the dark web.
I remember we waited like a year in America for the Humanity Bureau release. So, like, that was a tough one to wait for. But
yeah.
All right, so now that you mentioned the Humanity Bureau, Mike, let us go back to the beginning of the year. First movie that we covered, Mom and Dad. This is a movie that I saw last year at Fantastic Fest. We had Greg McLennan on the episode to talk about it. You guys both, obviously, over in Scotland saw Mom and Dad. You're screening it at Cagerama 2. You know, we already spent an hour discussing it, but quick thoughts. How does that fall? Where does that fall in the year of Cage? I think it's probably closer to the top than the bottom for me, but what do you guys think of Mom and Dad pretty quickly?
Pretty close to the top. Like, I mean, I'm not just saying that because the director is going to join us for a Q&A afterwards. It's also, like, hugely enjoyable film. I think there's hardly any setup. It's straight into it. There's no real mythology to it. It just cuts straight to the chase, and then there's no real meat on it. It's almost like a joke, like, structure of a film. It's just, like, set up, punchline, and it's out, and there's, like, really no, like, fat on it. I just found it really enjoyable.
I would like more Cage and Pants screen time, but I feel like that would be my comment for any film.
Yeah. If he's not in pants, he has to be smashing something up. So I think we got, you know...
Yeah, the balance is there.
Yeah, he smashes the pool table, right? Or there's the pool table scene.
While doing the hokey pokey, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed Mom and Dad this year. I thought it was a great way to kick it off. Joey, you know, we don't really... Or we all know, there's not very many horror movie Cage to choose
right,
from.
Right, right, right.
So that was a lot of fun. I did wish he was in it a little more, but it really, he really got to use like his strengths in it, I feel like, when he was on. And I was glad they didn't waste time establishing what we all know from watching similar movies in the past, like The Crazies or something. Like, we could all just get into it, get on with it. Like he says, sort of like set up, punchline, in and out. Nice and quick.
Next up, we had Looking Glass. We had Holly Gore, Mad Holly Gore, on to talk about a movie she did not like. But Looking Glass, which I don't know if any of you have seen Bad Times at the El Royale, but there's a little bit of Looking Glass in that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I haven't seen this one and realized, yes, we have.
I was going to say, yeah, you absolutely have
seen
this.
Yeah, I have seen this, but that's a comment on that film.
It's, you know, I think the most noteworthy thing to me is that he cleans his glasses with a dollar bill, which is... definitely something that happens in that movie. Not good. Not bad, but not great.
You liked it more than I did.
I did, but I also, you know, Robin Tunney from Prison Break is his wife in that. I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
They just inherit a motel. There's another one. They lost a child, right? So this sort of theme keeps coming. Cage is going to deal with a lot of loss this year in his characters.
Next up, the Humanity Bureau, which, Mike, you absolutely adored.
I adore
this
movie.
Baffles me. We have Lindsay Gibb on to talk about that one. Cage author Lindsay Gibb.
I know it's weak. I know it's got a lot of shortcomings, but I admire its potential and like what it wanted to be and do. And I just liked it as a dystopian story. I think it would have been a better read than a watch, but I'm glad it exists.
Did you guys see that one? I mean, that was one that you had way before us.
Well, funnily enough, we haven't seen that one, but it is on Netflix here. And like, I think I remember the trailers for it like kind of made it look not promising at all, or at least the first one did, and the second one was like more promising. But for one reason or another, we haven't got around to it yet.
It's because his face is so big in the poster.
His face is
it puts me off. I don't want to see big face Cage.
If you want to know exactly what the current climate in America is, watch that movie. It is a reflection of our times.
Mike, that's not even remotely true. I mean, I guess it kind of...
It's sort of based on a future that could, you know, that they're like, oh, if things keep going this way, Humanity Bureau is going to be, you know, it's going to happen.
And there is a picture of with a politician in that movie and... Donald Trump, so that's, you know, that's something. Next up, Mike, we had 211 with Walt Hickey, which was a great episode, but arguably, or maybe not even arguably, the worst Cage movie that we've ever seen.
That's putting a lot of weight on that.
Have you seen that or no?
No.
No, we haven't seen that.
It's got Weston in there. I thought that was interesting. Weston Cage plays a character. He's like one of the bank robbers. It's maybe the entire movie is a shootout, which was...
But that's making it sound
clever
than it is.
No, they didn't... Exactly. Like, that sounds cool in theory, but pulling that off, like, unless you're someone like Michael Mann in Heat, you know, like, I feel like, tone down your shootouts.
There was the Ben Wheatley film Free Fire as well. That made a really good fest of just being about a shootout.
Yes, but that was also, again, not as good as it could have been. Ben Wheatley's a guy that, like, I've got a lot of thoughts about Ben Wheatley, so maybe we'll do him for Cinemakers one day, except if I never see a field in England again, I'm probably okay with that.
Yeah, here it is.
Next up, we had Mandy with Christian Larson, co-host of Monkey Club, maybe a future host of another podcast on our network, who knows. Mandy, one of my absolute favorite movies of the year. Mike and I did a little bit of a weird thing in that we watched it again immediately and did a revisited of it, and then a week later did the actual Cage Club episode of it. So I don't know how much there is more to say about Mandy. I think all four of us really love that movie, but go for it.
I haven't seen it.
What?
Oh, no.
What?
Stop recording.
But, I mean, you're going to see it in a great environment, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, and we've even got the actual Cheddar Goblin for Q&A.
Oh, great.
I know that much, like how well I intertwine those references so no one guesses I've not seen the biggest Cage film ever.
I've seen Mandy. And
well done.
Two thumbs up. And yeah, we're looking forward to having the minds behind Too Many Cooks and the Cheddar Goblin joining as well. So it should be fun. But yeah, that definitely was like at such a high point this year.
Mike and I have talked about a couple times that we had tickets to see that in two different theaters, And then we wound up just watching it in his place with our friend Brian, who hosts High School Slumber Party here on the network. But, you know, I wish that I saw it in theaters, but I also was just glad that we got to see it, you know, basically as many times as we wanted right away, so.
Yeah, and I bought a brand new TV that day.
True.
So it was the second movie I screened on it, the first movie being Firebirds, yep, with Nicolas Cage and Tommy Lee Jones.
I am the greatest.
We recently watched that.
It's
that's
so a fun
good.
One.
Yeah. Next, after Mandy, we had Teen Titans Go to the Movies, where Superman was finally, or Cage finally got to play Superman. Lindsay Gibb once again back on that one. That, well, another movie we're going to get to in a little bit. Animated movies, Cage sort of in the background, but this was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be, and I really enjoyed Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, it's great, and like just fantastic that he could do Superman and Spider-Man in one year, and, you know, just finally get him playing Superman.
Again, my only comment for this is that I'd like to see him pantless more, but I guess it's a PG, so allowed.
Yeah, I really like this one too, Joey. And then, like you said, finally got to be Superman. And I think it showed that he worked. He would have maybe worked well too. As some of these lines in live action would have been a lot of fun to see. Like, I think he says ta-ta, ta-ta, as he flies away and stuff. But yeah, and just getting animated Cage again and sort of playing the background Cage, you know? I think, like you especially were saying recently a lot, where it's like, we don't necessarily need him to be the lead. Like, it's great when he is, but it's also cool if he could just sort of be a great supporting character as well, and like someone to enhance other performances or other parts of the film.
Yeah.
So,
which,
some of that.
Which he did in the next movie, the only other movie that we're going to talk about today, I mean the only other, as in we've already talked about eight of them, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is another one of my favorite movies of the year. Incredible. Has that released in Scotland yet? Have you guys seen that yet?
Yeah, just last week I saw it. I don't think Megan's seen it.
I've not seen it. I'm limited with film watching because I have to make sure every second film I watch is Valley Girl. So it slows me down a bit, but I'll get
Wait,
there
are you really alternating Valley Girl with every other movie?
No, I mean, I've only watched it 5 times this year.
Okay, that's not crazy. I mean, you know, yeah. I have a podcast where 3 times a year we're watching every Fast and Furious movie, so
oh my God.
I get it.
I think I've just watched Night of the Comet about 3 or 4 times, you know, for fun.
Also,
so.
Yeah, that's got very great, like, Valley Girl references in it. Very great being grammatically correct.
Joey, you and I, this was only the second Cage movie we saw together in theaters,
yep,
the first being Snowden.
Yep.
Like you said, we had tickets for Mandy, but we opted to watch it in the comfort of our own homes. But this was, that was a great day too, because we just spent all day at the movies, but this was a great film going experience. Like, you know, the art, the story, just like everything really clicked.
So now as we look ahead to what's coming next, we have at some point, maybe next year, maybe not, Running with the Devil, Primal, Kill Chain, Grand Isle, A Score to Settle, Prisoners of the Ghostland, and The Croods 2. So first up, I don't know, Sean and Megan, if you know anything about these. I don't really. Mike, I don't know if you do either. But first up, Running with the Devil, an international drug kingpin sends two of his most highly regarded assassins to investigate why shipments are being hijacked and overcut. Starring Nicolas Cage, Leslie Bibb, Lawrence Fishburne, Barry Pepper, Adam Goldberg, Clifton Collins Jr.
Wow.
Directed and written by this guy, Jason Cabell, who seems mostly like an actor for things that I don't know, and this seems to be only his second writing and directing thing. So, does that sound good? We're obviously going to all see all of these movies, but are we looking forward to this one more? I think just because the cast alone.
Yeah, I'm a big like Lawrence Fishburne fan, so mm-hmm. I think him and Cage will be fire emoji.
But who is he playing? That's the question. Is he
Nicolas Cage plays... This is super cool. Or you might hate this. I think it's super cool. Nobody has a character name. So Nicolas Cage is the cook. Leslie Bibb is the agent in charge. Lawrence Fishburne is the man. Barry Pepper is the boss.
This sounds like it might have theatrical release potential. I love this cast.
You know,
and they're all pretty high, you know, like... Lawrence Fishburne was in a Marvel movie recently, Leslie Bibb.
And what I was just going to say is that, you know, I just saw yesterday, as we're recording this, The Mule, and I knew nothing about that movie. I really liked it, but Lawrence Fishburne is in it. There's a scene where, like, Lawrence Fishburne's just talking to Bradley Cooper, and I was like, what the fuck is it? Like, what? I mean, I know it's a Clint Eastwood movie, but, like, I was like, where are they? And, like, then, a little bit later, there's a scene where, like, Bradley Cooper and Michael Pena and Eugene Cordero are all in a car. I'm like, where is this movie? Like, how? Like, I knew nothing about it. All I knew from the trailer was, like, him with, like, his, you know, his duffel bag full of, you know, kilos of cocaine or whatever. But, like, I was like, where were all these people hiding? But so many people in The Mule. Very, very good. Go check that out. But Running with Devil, I am excited for. But yeah, Mike, I agree. I think very possible that we might get a theatrical release. Here is a crazy poster where they're all credited. Cage with glasses.
A strong cage look.
Lawrence Fishburne with like a hat of some kind. So yeah.
What's the tagline? Is tastes like heaven, burns like hell.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
Mike, on second thought, I don't think this is going to hit theaters. Next movie up, we have Primal.
This the animal one, the boat full of animals that start going nuts or something? I think I've heard a little bit about this one. I'm anticipating it.
Yeah, so a big game hunter for zoos who has booked passage on a Greek shipping freighter with a fresh haul of exotic and deadly animals from the Amazon, including a rare white jaguar, along with a political assassin being extradited to the U.S. in secret. 2 days into the journey, the assassin escapes and releases the captive animals, throwing the ship into chaos. Starring Nicolas Cage, Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos, Famke Janssen, and also of sort of note is that I reached out to a guy on Twitter, this guy Tommy Walker, who I think is going to be in maybe a superhero movie coming up. His Instagram is very hopeful and optimistic. And he's in this movie with Nicolas Cage. I don't know who he is, but I was like, hey, do you have any interest in talking to us? And he said yes. So I don't know if he's going to be on the show or not, but like we might actually have someone who has worked with Cage talking to us about this movie if he's not a superstar by the time this movie comes out. But Primal, written by Richard Letter and directed by Nick Powell. Richard Letter, who has written nothing I've heard of, a lot of TV stuff. And Nick Powell, who is, mostly a stunt guy, did stunts on The Bourne Identity, The Last Samurai, a bunch of movies. And he also, Mike and Sean and Megan, he directed Outcast, the Cage Hayden Christensen movie.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a second Cage team up. What are we thinking about Primal? I'm excited for it.
I am automatically disappointed because I thought you said a big game hunter for Zeus, as in the Greek god. But I believe you said Zeus, as in
Zeus, Z-O-O-S, yes.
The animal deal.
Z-O-O-S.
I would have been excited to see Cage as a big game hunter for Zeus. So I'm not sure how I feel about Primal.
It sounds like Con Air with animals, so I'm kind of into it.
Okay, I am back on board.
Yeah, I just like the idea that he's trapped on a boat with wild animals. What's he going to do? He's going to be crazy.
Well, is that, again, what's his character name? Because for all we know, he's playing a rare white jaguar.
He's
playing a human
Frank
character.
Frank Walsh.
I guess that's close to my name, I think, is what Megan's trying to say.
Next movie we have Kill Chain, written and directed by Ken Sanzel. He's written a bunch of things, wrote a bunch of TV show episodes. The three strangers' lives are inevitably entangled in a conflict none of them are prepared for. Starring Nicolas Cage, Enrico Colatoni, who I think is maybe best known for being Veronica Mars' dad on Veronica Mars, and also starring Ryan Kwantin, why do I know who you are?
He's the guy from...
He was in True Blood. He was in 81 episodes of True Blood. This feels like the most vague description and cast that we've had so far, but, Cage is in it, and I'm excited. You guys excited?
Yeah, yes. Why not?
I like the title, Kill Chain. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Next up, Grand Isle. A young father is charged for murder and must prove his innocence through recalling a very twisted and dark night of events. Directed by Stephen S. Campanelli, who has directed things that I have never heard of before. Written by Ivor William Jala, who has written nothing I've ever heard of. He only wrote one other thing. And also written by Rich Ronat. This is the first thing he's ever written. And this stars Nicolas Cage's second build on here, but also in here, Kelsey Grammer and Luke Benward is the top build guy. I don't know who you are. Best known for How to Eat Fried Worms. So,
how on earth has Luke Benward ended up above Nicolas Cage?
Is Cage the dad?
He plays Walter, if that helps.
No. Again, it's kind of a nice title, Grand Isle. Yeah. I don't know how it relates to the synopsis at all, but I'm down. It seems like it's going to be maybe a thriller of some type.
Next up, A Score to Settle. An ex-enforcer for a local crime syndicate has vowed to enact retribution on his mob bosses after 22 years of wrongful imprisonment. The only thing diverting his violent plans is a newfound relationship to his beloved son, starring Nicolas Cage and Benjamin Bratt, directed by Sean Koo. Any thoughts on that one? I think we've entered the vague thriller-y straight-to-Netflix
era. I was going to say, these all feel like streaming titles, which I definitely will watch and enjoy. not overly excited.
So you're promising to enjoy this ahead of time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the like least you can do for Cage.
We will enjoy these movies. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
We give him our love. We give him our life.
Well, we are in a cult.
We are. So
it could always be interesting when Cage works with first timers, writers, directors, what have you, and all that. You never really know which way it's going to go. I mean, most of the time, yes, it tends to get released straight to video on demand, but that doesn't necessarily always mean that they're the worst movies either. You know, I think Joey and I have been surprised once or twice with a couple of those direct to DVD flicks and things.
I mean, maybe more early on, like Stolen and Seeking Justice, those were really good, but you know, since then it's been
trying to stay positive.
The last one I think we're gonna get next year, since The Croods 2, which we'll get to next, is gonna come out I think 2020, but Prisoners of the Ghostland, the one I'm most excited for, a notorious criminal must break an evil curse in order to rescue an abducted girl who has mysteriously disappeared. The reason I am so excited for this, no one else in the movie so far except for Nicolas Cage, directed by Sion Sono, who has directed Why Don't You Play in Hell, directed Tokyo Tribe, has made like such a career out of crazy, insane movies. This is also the one that Cage is going around saying that this is his craziest movie. Definitely one to look out for.
It's Tag. We just really? Spotted that he directed Tag, which we watched this year as well.
I like this idea of a curse in Cage, so I'm on board for sure. Oh, wait, he did Tag, the one that's on Netflix?
Yes.
The one that's like the dimension-hopping schoolgirl thing?
Yeah, that's a weird and good movie.
And then last but not least, the only other credit on his IMDb right now, not coming out next year, not coming out until September 18th, 2020, The Croods 2. The prehistoric family, The Croods, are challenged by a rival family, the Bettermans, who claim to be better and more evolved. Back, Ryan Reynolds. Back, Emma Stone. Also in here, playing the neighbors, Leslie Mann and Peter Dinklage. Clark Duke back. Kat Dennings is in here. Cloris Leachman's in here. Catherine Keener's in here. Gonna have to bring back our Croods expert, Brian Petronchak, for that one. But we really like The Croods, and I am excited for The Croods too.
Yes, very excited.
It's pretty crazy that The Croods went on. They got their own Netflix show. I thought for sure that would have been the end of that. Like, we're never getting another movie, but that show must have done pretty well then and revived interest. Because, like, I love animated Cage, especially when they use them, and they definitely used them in Croods 1.
Have you read the quote that Cage gave about Prisoners of the Ghostland? He's described he gave a really, really exciting quote about the film. He said, it might be the wildest movie I've ever made, and that's saying something. It's out there. I wear a skin-tight black leather jumpsuit with grenades attached to different body parts, and if I don't rescue the governor's daughter from the state line where they're all ghosts and bring her back, they're going to blow me up. It's just crazy. It's way out there. And that's the quote.
Wow, it was almost like an Escape from New York type of thing.
Yeah, I think they had us at skin-tight black leather jumpsuit.
Oh yeah, I'd feel like checked in by that point. Yeah. I don't care what happens with the jumpsuit, as long as it's on there.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us today to talk about Between Worlds. Best of luck with Cage-O-Rama. We have some fans over in England. I know that I'm pretty sure John and Danielle, who have listened and who have written in, who have sent us some fan art and stuff, I think that they're both going to go. So I know that they're very excited to see Mandy, see Between Worlds, to just be part of Cage-O-Rama. Are there still tickets available or no?
Well, there's no weekend passes. There's no day passes. There's some tickets left for Between Worlds because we have a bigger screen. But for the most part, it's sold out. I think we may have some tickets for Adaptation, which was a late edition. Because tragically, we can't show Zandali anymore.
Judd Reinhold get in the way with that?
Yeah, he had an injunction against us.
I feel like it's probably for the best that you don't watch Zandali in a packed theater, but maybe you're missing out on something. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that's the only and best way to watch it.
The thing is, like, we only really realized in retrospect that if we'd gone ahead with that, we would have had Zandali, Vampire's Kiss, Wild at Heart, and Between Worlds all in one day. And that is an awful lot of partially closed Cage across all those films. And then obviously climaxing with the banana hammock in Between Worlds. But
give the people what they want.
Yeah. but yeah, we're really glad to have Adaptation. But it does mean that we have a couple of tickets left for that screening. So yeah, apart from that, we're also about.
Well, like I said, best of luck. And Mike, we will be back shortly. I guess in a couple of weeks, you'll hear us again for the next Cage Club Revisited, which we're going to be doing Raising Arizona. So we've been saving that for a while, but we're going to do that very soon, and we'll be back every 2 weeks. Then whenever we have new Cage movies, we'll be back here, but we also are now we're about to be in the swing of the Tom Club, the Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise podcasts, alternating every other Friday. Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, come check us out. Everything at cageclub.me. We have an email address here, mailbag@cageclub.me. Email us thoughts about Between Worlds. Are you going to Cage-O-Rama? Let us know. What do you think of Cage's 8 movies in a year? Because that's ridiculous. That's crazy. That's awesome. What do you think of the movies coming next year? All sorts of fun stuff. Just email, just say hi, mailbag@cageclub.me. And last but not least, we have a Patreon account, which we released, I think, a separate little special thing. But if you want to support us in our pursuit to keep watching Nicolas Cage movies forever, if you want to help us or decide what we're going to watch next, if you want to get some Cage Club merch, go to patreon.com/cageclub, chip in a couple bucks, you can get some cool rewards and prizes and swag and stuff like that. So, and you can also just say hi there, because I'm posting some special stuff there that I'm not posting anywhere else. So, a good year, Mike. Thank you for doing this Cage Club stuff with us.
Very
I'm
going
to see you literally tomorrow to do more Cage Club stuff. But as far as this feed goes, this is the last episode of the year. Go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, and at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, mailbag@cageclub.me. Just let us know that you're listening. Just say hi. Patreon.com/cageclub, and we'll see you next year for hopefully more than 8 Cage movies. Who knows? We can dream big. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And from Cage-O-Rama, those are Megan Mitchell and Sean Welsh. And we'll see you next time for whatever movie it is, right here on Cage Club.
Yes, we see.